to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our scheduled guest tonight was attorney I. Nelson Rose. Turns out he had a scheduling conflict, and so he's not going to be on tonight. We're going to reschedule him soon. Filling in at the last moment, we're having Anthony Curtis, publisher of the Las Vegas Advisor and Huntington Press, and
boo.
Friend of the show.
Boo.
No boo. Yay.
We have several items to discuss. First of all, you can now play online poker in Nevada as of 2 days ago through Ultimate Poker, which is associated with Station Casinos. Munch, you looked into playing this. What'd you find out?
Well, I tried to sign up the first day, and I made it to the sign-up screen, and they asked for your Social Security number. Now, I should say you don't have to live in Nevada. You just have to be in Nevada when you play. So, you know, how hard is that going to be for people to spoof their IP addresses or, you know, put a computer in their friend's house that lives in Las Vegas? But what stopped me was they asked for my Social Security number, and I was unwilling to give that to them.
Why is that?
The problem is once that genie is out of the bottle, you can never put it back in. So, for example, if you have credit, say, or you get a W-2G at an MGM property, they have your Social Security number. And if you ever then have a problem where they ask you not to play there anymore, well, that's all well and good. You go out, you get a new name. But if you ever want to try to make a really big play, even though you have a new name, when you get to a certain level of really high play, you almost always have to give your Social Security number because either you're going to trigger a CTR or
currency transaction report.
Right. So now the problem is when you give them your Social Security number, it will pop in their system that they already have that Social Security number tied to another name. And they then come to you and say, how come this doesn't match? And you can say, you know, well, I had my name changed, but they can also go look up your prior record with them. And
there might be red flags associated with that
old name. Exactly. So, you know, I don't really anticipate there being any, you know, Don Johnson type plays at a Station Casino, but still, I would rather keep that information private. So,
Anthony, you've looked into this online poker here in Vegas. What have you found out?
Well, there's not much to find out yet. You know, I mean, it's so new that there's not too much to find out. What's interesting is that this happened really out of the blue. Nobody expected this. I mean, somebody expected that somebody was going to open, but they thought there'd be a buildup and that we would know it was going to happen. All of a sudden, there was an announcement that Ultimate Poker, which is affiliated with, basically owned by Station Casinos, as you said, is affiliated with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, UFC, which is why they kept the kind of weird Ultimate name, which has sort
weird
of
meaning bad.
Bad, you know, connotation.
Synonymous with
Ultimate
rip-off.
Yeah, Ultimate Bet and the problems there. But, I mean, I understand it. But they just came very, very stealth-like. All of a sudden, boom, man, there they were. And I was stunned. I had no clue it was coming. I talked to other people who are really tight and into the biz. I said, did you know this was coming? No, nobody knew it was coming. Now, it doesn't seem to me or anybody who's really followed it closely that they can make a go of it in Nevada alone, that it just isn't going to happen. There are not enough people for them to get the essentially the critical mass that they need, or the liquidity, as they call it. They're going to need to team up. But being first, I think is very, very important. And I think it was a really, really strong, aggressive move on their part. I think it was very clever.
It seems like they have a lot of bugs to work out. Yeah, I don't want to say bugs, but for example, there's no sign-up bonuses yet. There's no affiliate program yet. The stakes are still low, from 25 cents up to 10-20 limit hold'em, or I think 5-10 no limit. And Bob, you actually had another real bonehead thing on their part, that if you have a Verizon phone, you can't play.
Yeah, according to Card Player magazine, they check your whether or not you are physically within the state of Nevada by checking where your cell phone is located. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the way Verizon sends out its information that's a glitch that isn't recognized by the Ultimate Poker software. So now Ultimate is saying that's a glitch in Verizon, and Verizon has to fix it. But if you have AT&T or Sprint or something else,
what about a landline?
No, I don't think so. It's a triangulation method that they use, uh-huh. and they use it through the cell phones. And I believe if you do not have a cell phone, you cannot sign up. And there is the Verizon glitch, and there's another glitch. I mean, the glitch is that, glitch or bug, is that a lot of the protective software, the McAfees and so forth, are rejecting it. That happened on mine, and I heard of a lot of others. I tried to sign up right away because I just wanted to see what it was all about. And my software absolutely would not allow me to do it. Now, there's ways around it, but most people aren't going to know those ways around it.
Well,
it would not
turning off your firewall.
Yeah, but most people aren't going to understand. There's no option. I mean, you know, if you don't know what's going on, you can't say override. And a lot of people don't know what's going on when it comes to that. They'll eventually find out, but it's a delaying tactic. I mean, a delaying problem right now, a barrier.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, do you expect Station to run this well? Like, I don't have a high opinion of Station.
I do. I have a much higher opinion of them. I think that they've done a lot of things right, and they do a lot of things that aren't basically in the wheelhouse of somebody like you who wants to see things. I think for their general business plans, I think they're very, very clever and they do things right. I think that they've got a lot of people lined up in this that really know their stuff. And I think this was very, very calculated for them to come out first. They accomplished that, and I think they've got some pretty aggressive plans. In fact, I know they do. I've already spoken with some people there, and they're talking about how they want to roll it out. Now, I agree with you that they don't have the right things in place. They don't have the right incentives in place. They don't have – I think rakeback is where they, you know, actually give you some of your money back if you're a good customer. I think that's illegal according to the Nevada statute, so they can't do anything there. But they're going to have incentives to bring people on, especially when competition shows up. None of that is in place right now. I don't see anything that would induce me to sign up other than just wanting to get into a game.
Well,
there's a free roll coming up if you do
sign
up.
Yeah, that free roll. But, I mean, those free rolls aren't as powerful as – you know, as other inducements that they could give you, incentives.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I can't see people wanting to come to Las Vegas to sit in their hotel room and play online poker, right? If you live in another state and you're coming to Las Vegas, you want to be out in the casinos, you know. So all I can see it being is a bunch of pros, you know, who are trying to bottom feed. And the stakes aren't even that high for the pros.
Well, so. I love that point that you make. When I read that on your blog, I just laughed out loud. I was like, yeah, you're right, you know. But they're going to have enough people in Nevada who are playing. It's going to be like the equivalent of a small home game, you know, as opposed to what they want this to be. You know, you walk in yesterday, I think, when they opened up, or 2 days ago when they opened up, I think they had 6 tables. Today, when we checked, Blair Rodman, my author of Kill Phil, told me that they had over 20 tables going today. So you're already seeing, you know, like this. But, you know, you could walk into a PokerStars thing and they had how many hundreds of tables going, you know, and that's their goal. And they're not going to do it with the Nevada alone. It just can't happen. They're just, you know, the population base isn't proper.
And they might be feeding off themselves. There's two of those tables used to be players who played at Red Rock.
I don't know. I don't think they're worried about that. I think same thing as when they opened riverboat casinos and all of that, all it did is tell more people that, you know, here's the game and welcome to it, and they'll play in both places, just like people continue to come to Vegas. I don't think there's going to be a problem with that so much.
I want to go back to what Munchkin first mentioned, where about the Social Security number. I've been a video poker player for so long, and I understand that you have to give your social when you get W-2Gs. that it's no longer on my radar. That, I mean, it's just a given that that's one of, that's the price of doing business. And so, you know, it surprises me that you've been gambling 40 years or whatever the number is, and still are protecting that in certain contexts, and are still able to do that. That's
yeah. Well, I just you know, after the whole Don Johnson thing,
Don Johnson played rebates.
Right. Don Johnson was the guy who won millions of dollars in Atlantic City playing the 20% loss rebates. And, you know, after I heard about that, I realized, wow, you know, there's some real money to be made there. But I can't show up at a casino and try to get that deal. I mean, there's just... you know, there's just no way they're going to give that deal to me. Now, you know, I mean, and I do have a clean name I could use, but, you know, they can find things out pretty quickly if they want to.
All right. So you got to find out how to get a new Social Security number. Is that your plan?
Yeah. Now, I've heard this. I've heard that it is possible to get a new Social Security number. But, you know, if one of our listeners has ever actually done it, I would love to hear from somebody. You know, if they have and what it entailed and how they went about it.
Do you mind if they email you from the jail cell?
Yeah, you're welcome to email me. rwmunchkin@gmail.com.
All right, let's go on a different subject. There's been an indictment against some players who officially abusing the double-up feature. Now, according to Wired Online Magazine, with some generations of IGT software, now it's all been replaced. If the double up feature was turned on, you could change the stakes of the game after the hand was over. At the Silverton Casino here in Las Vegas, there were machines in the high limit room which could be played between $1 and $10. A player could play the $1 game until he hit a four of a kind, and then without playing that hand off, switch games, insert more money, change denominations to $10, and then when he came back to the four of a kind, on the original game, it would still be there, only now the machine would recalculate it at the $10 rate. So if he was playing triple-double bonus with a set of fours with a kicker, normally played $2,000, when it recalculated its hand, it would now be paid off $20,000. No matter what the pay schedule was, you could win at this. So apparently he took $500,000 out of Silverton and the Meadows Casino in near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he's being charged with something called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, CFAA, which I have not heard of. It basically says you can't take advantage of a computer program that allows you to do more than it was originally intended to do. Pretty vague.
Really vague.
Well, I missed the – where's the double-up feature come in?
Apparently, if the double-up feature is turned on, this is a glitch in the software.
Well, okay, the double-up feature caused it. He didn't have to double-up in the process or anything.
No, he didn't have to double-up. Okay, but right. When the double-up feature was turned on and you switch games back and forth, certain things would happen. Now, how this was ever discovered. Now, the story I had heard earlier was different than this. So I don't know if Wired Magazine has it correct or... But I do know it happened at Silverton. I talked to the GM, and he was, you know, talking about watching it on the tape. But somehow by pushing certain sets of buttons, they can make it pay a four of a kind. And so I don't know.
You know,
well, the defense is, well, he was just doing legal things. Pushing buttons is legal.
Yeah, I mean... he's taking an out-and-out shot. You know what I mean?
For sure.
It's different, I think, if you sit down at a machine and the four of a kind is supposed to pay 50 to 1 and it's paying 500 to 1. I don't have a problem with that. You know what I mean? It's like you're not doing anything to induce them to pay you more. But when you're logging out of a game in the middle of the hand and changing the stakes, you know, and then retroactively getting paid at 10 times, you know, I mean, do I think he should be prosecuted and thrown in jail? No. But
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think the guy should go to jail for it. But should he get to keep the money? Definitely not. You know.
It's hard to have one. They're not going to have restitution without severe punishment along with it.
What do you mean?
Well, if you only get the restitution if there's some kind of a punishment settled. And so jail would be typically part of that. If you have to repay $500,000, that's a serious punishment. I would think jail would be almost mandatory associated with that size of a punishment.
Why? Isn't having to return the money punishment enough on its own?
Well, I don't know.
Well, if you want my opinion.
I do.
I guess that's why I'm here.
That's why you're here.
You know, philosophically, you know, first of all, how's a guy going to know about this unless he had inside information on how these things were programmed to begin with? So, I mean, it's almost like playing with the help a little bit.
I don't know. I think, you know, guys
there's some
try
clever people.
All this yeah, kind of weird stuff.
I understand. But either way, I mean, I just threw that out there. Either way, I've always pretty much felt on these malfunctions and these machine problems and everything else, it's incumbent on the casinos to police their own machines. They should be right in the beginning. The casinos and the manufacturers in tandem, they should be right to begin with. When they're not, they should have to pay, you know, the price, which they have. And they should be diligent and watch this and not let it get to $500,000 loss and that sort of thing. So in a way, well, I guess fully philosophically, I would say that the guy didn't do anything wrong, except for one thing. That law exists. When a law like that exists, and Bob, you go, well, it's a little vague and whatever, I think that pretty much we all understand the spirit of that law, and that law exists. When I played...
Had you heard of that law before?
I didn't heard of the law, but ignorance is is no defense. When I played with my group, we made a conscious decision not to break laws, and for a lot of reasons. We didn't want to go to the hoosegow. Some of us just thought breaking laws was wrong, and that was our point of demarcation. You know, these are things that I've taught, you know, just my son growing up when he's 14 years old and having trouble in school. I said, you know, school puts down the law when you're there. When you're working for an employer, he puts down the law. When you're in society, the laws are the law. And whether you agree with your teacher or your boss or the laws at all, in order to live in society, you have to comply. So I would say since that law was there, that it should have been complied with and he didn't and hence guilty.
Yeah, but we've all bent laws. And, how many times... Have you had coupons which say only one coupon per day per person? But you've had more than one, and so you went to this part of the casino and cashed one, and you walked 50 feet.
But that's not a law. I mean, it's a casino rule, not a law.
It's certainly policy.
I mean, but it's not a law. I mean, it's a good point. It's not a law. This is a law. You know, let me give you an example. And it works the other way. You know, there's a converse to this. When I first learned about hole carding, I wasn't sure if it was something I wanted to do or not. It just, I'm no super moralist, but it just seemed like cheating to me, and I didn't want to do it. And when I heard about the Einbinder-Dalbin decision, I went, the law says it's good. So I did it. And I mean, that's what governed that. And I've seen other things that I thought were perfectly legal, but there were laws against it, like using devices and all, which I thought should have been, but there was a law, so I never did it. And I mean, you've got to figure out what your, you know, what path you follow. And I think that if we're going to live in this country, we live by the laws.
Well, but what if you were in that situation? I mean, what if somebody had said, hey, you can do this right now? You didn't know about this. None of us knew about this law until just now. I mean, would you have done it?
Probably yes. If somebody showed me the way to do that and I thought it was legal. And maybe I'd vetted it, you know, I'd actually checked and vetted it and said and found it was legal. This law didn't exist. Yeah, I think I would. I think, you know why? Because it's the same thing they're going into the game trying to beat the suckers, right? That's what the casinos are doing. They're trying to beat the suckers and they beat them out of a lot of money. Now, if I find a way to make them the sucker and it's legal, yeah, I'd have done it.
There's no question I would do it. And I'm with you. Anything legal. And like I've played with computers. When they became illegal, I stopped. You know, I had the same line, mm-hmm. You know, this one would have felt hinky to me. But, again, if I had had Bob Nersessian say, no, that's legal, man, I would be there.
Yeah, I would too.
You know.
You know what? I don't, you know, that's not my job to decide what's right and wrong because I don't know what's right and wrong. And, you know, we have people, we have officials that tell us what that, you know, and we accept them, and that's why we live here. If they tell me it's wrong and I can't do it, I don't. If they tell me it's right and it's okay and I can, I do.
Yeah.
And I want to.
All right. Very good. Let's do another subject. Last week on the show, I mentioned that if you play video poker at less than 99% accuracy, you're basically wasting your time. I received an email suggesting that surely playing at 95% level was better than playing at the 85% level. So, doesn't that sound right? Well, not to me. First of all, it's essentially impossible to play at the 85% accuracy level if you're smarter than a turnip. I'm not saying you're not occasionally going to miss 15 out of 100 hands, which is possible but pretty rare, but the EV of those hands is quite a bit higher than 85%. For example, in Jacks or Better, if you're dealt ace-king in one suit and 3-4-5 in another, you may not know whether you should hold the ace-king or the 3-4-5. It happens that the 3-4-5 is correct by a mile, but the ace-king is only, you know, has 95% of the EV. So even though that's a pretty major mistake and one that would be easy to make, you're still not going to get down to 85%. So, secondly, this show is geared towards players who are playing with an advantage or who want to. Well, you can find games in Las Vegas for low stakes approaching 101% return, where 99% accuracy level basically means you're playing at an even game. Playing at 95% accuracy, even on these best games, means you're giving up 4% of your bet to the house. I would hope that this is an absolute no-no to any listeners of this show. Playing where the house has any edge at all should be anathema to gamblers who value winning. So the comment that playing 95% accuracy is better than 85, that's like saying it's better to die from strychnine poisoning than to die from another fast-acting poison. I think dead is dead, and neither is preferable to the other. Any thoughts on this?
What if the poison tastes better?
Yeah. You know, yeah, we want an edge. Yes, we would hope all our listeners play with an edge. But, you know, not everyone does. You know, I don't see it as so black.
And we want all the listeners we can get, so we're not going to bar them from listening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you should strive to play as well as possible. And yes, 95 is better than 85. But I just think you should strive to get to 100. And
If you only can play at 95, you ought to give up video poker and take up bowling. It's just not your game.
I don't know. I think you could probably still play it. Well, first of all, I think anybody can get to better than 95.
I do too.
You know, and even if they can't get to 100. I think they can probably still have positive EV with comps. You know, I mean, if you include like hotel rooms and food.
At 99%, yes. At 95%, no.
Yeah.
Well, so. here's where you begin to hate me and you never invite me back. I absolutely don't agree with Bob on this one. I believe it's a...
I hate you, Anthony.
it's a total utility situation, meaning what jazzes you? What are you there for? If you're there to make money, if winning money is the only reason you do it, which is what a definition of a pro would be, or a very, very high-level expert, only winning, only being as good as you can be and only winning matters, then yes, this all matters. That is such a small percentage of gamblers and players. Now, you know, let's say that I'm a recreational player and I just love video poker because it's just a lot of fun. And let's say I can't even drink enough free drinks to make up for my losses. And, you know, I can't justify it on any means, at any level. And you tell me to go take up bowling, and I go, that's not fun. I don't like to bowl. I don't want to bowl. I want to play video poker. I don't care. I'm going to accept that I'm going to lose X amount of money. I don't look down on that person. That person's made a conscious decision. That's his utility. His utility is having a good time. And for me, I don't really care what level he plays at. Now, he should get Bob Dancer strategy cards. You know, he should buy, you know, video poker software. Bob Dancer video poker software. You know, really.
But I mean, who's the publisher of those products?
Well, yes, I have my agenda as well. But I honestly feel that way. I felt that way from the start, that I told people a lot. They said, you love to gamble. Do you really love it? I go, no, I don't love it. I love the money I made from it. I did it to win. now that I'm really not allowed to play, like you guys still play, I'm really not. I can do things, but I can't play my game of choice, which was blackjack, and I can't play certain games that I used to be able to play because I'm just too well known now. I will play negative expectation games like video poker just for fun. I will do that, and I'm a guy who came from the other side of the fence.
All right, very good. Yeah. So let's change subjects since this is Anthony's last time he's going to be on the show.
hey, plugged your book. You know,
one more time then. Okay, good. Now, lawyer Bob Nersessian is a frequent guest on this show. Recently, he posted on a blackjack forum that casino surveillance can easily read your cell phone text messages. I believe this. When Shaq and I visited the South Point surveillance room last year, we found we could easily read the daily racing form that was on the counter. And so if you can read that, those numbers are smaller than what's on cell phones. So I'm not sure how legal it is for the casinos to be reading your text messages, but it's technologically feasible. Therefore, if I'm texting in a casino about gambling, I'm going to be pretty discreet. For example, let's say Munchkin and I were on a play together. Now, this has never happened, but let's say it did happen. Now, I would not, in my phone book where I put his name, I would not say Richard Munchkin, for which he's grateful for. I would call him something else. Now, it could, you know, I could use a name like Red Dog or something, but they know that's a made-up name, and so they're going to be suspicious of that. So I probably would use Joe Smith or something, or especially a name, initial and then a last name that could be any denomination, like Lee could be white, black, yellow, or Park could be, you know, there's a couple different. So they, you know, D Park could be anybody. And so, therefore, they wouldn't know that that's Munchkin. And if I was calling him in to play at a certain table or something, I would not say table three, but we'd have codes that table three, I refer to apples or grapefruits or something. And I would probably tilt the phone so they couldn't read it easily. So I'm assuming that texting gambling stuff while you're in a casino, you should be pretty discreet about if you do it at all, because Big Brother could be watching.
Yeah, you definitely have to be careful. You know, another thing that happens is if you – like I have an Android phone and I have a Gmail account, and so my contacts are, you know, connected – and some of my contacts, because they're in Gmail, when they come up on my phone, their picture pops up as well as their name. So, yeah.
That's
so
great.
If you're playing with Tommy Hyland, you know, and his picture pops up and says Tommy Hyland, you know, it's probably not a good thing for you.
You should fix your address, but you can stop that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have. I had to because I realized one time, you know, the name was not a popular one on my phone that popped up. In that post, Bob said that Bob Nersessian said that this was part of a case where they were getting the video from surveillance as part of discovery, and in there were, you know, these shots of the cell phone with the text messages, and people used to think that they were safe if they just kept moving while they were doing it, but apparently they can just take one frame, you know, from if they just grab you while you're moving and just take one frame and then blow it up, they can still get it. So moving doesn't help you, doesn't save you there.
But holding the phone vertically rather than horizontally should make it harder for them.
It should make it harder, but it, you know, you almost need to be up against a wall or a pillar or something because often there are domes behind you, you know. So
you could hold it up in the air like you're, you know, and look at looking up at it. You know,
you're
like,
looking up at it,
like
yeah.
Taking eye drops from your phone.
Yeah.
You know, I always, when we were playing, it used to just drive me absolutely crazy.
Hadn't invented cell phones back then.
I know, but I'm going to make a point. Of all the sophisticated things we would do, the least sophisticated thing we did was keep our identities, keep the fact that we were together unknown. We were very bad at that. I mean, a lot of people seem to be a lot of groups are very bad at that. We were very bad at that. And I mean, this is really interesting information. You know, if I were out there, I would be like, wow, yeah, we have to do something. But this is just something that's hard to remember and think about. I mean, our best This is embarrassing. It's not almost embarrassing. It's embarrassing. But we were once, we got together.
If it's really embarrassing, you can come back on the show again.
Well, we went on a cruise. We went on a cruise out of Florida, out of Miami Beach, wherever. I think it was Miami. And we went specifically to play on this one ship because of rules and because of table configuration and things that we were doing that involved hole carding and so forth. We had a couple of really
spooking,
good days.
It sounds like.
Yeah, it was a spooking situation also, mostly. And which is seeing it from behind, having somebody see it from behind and give you a signal. And all of a sudden on the third day, there was heat everywhere. They were going absolutely crazy. We thought we were being real slick. We were playing it real well. We were being successful. We had shifts. We were, you know, people were taking over. Everything was choreographed very, very well. And all of a sudden, there was something going on in the middle of the pit at the pillar there. And our guy who was in charge of kind of running the show, you've always got a guy who's kind of in the lead, came and looked, and he just dropped his eyes, and he gave the leave, you know, heart attack, what we called it, heart attack, like leave now. Drop everything you're doing and leave. So we all scattered. There's no more pretense at that point. You don't go one at a time. You just get up and go.
Yeah.
And what had happened was, the night before we left, we all went out and partied and got ready for the play and all got a little liquored up. And at the gangplank, we all took a photo together, which they had in the center of the pit. That's, you know.
You know, I have to
you
say.
You can come back on the show again, Anthony.
In the old days, you know, we used to do the same kind of thing, have a big hole card play, you know, and then literally get a comp and the whole team would go eat in the steakhouse together.
That kind of stuff.
And yeah, and, you know.
It was even in Atlantic City, we would do stuff. We would leave the premises and we would go to, you know, we'd infiltrate a big tournament, maybe take the tournament down, go for this big victory dinner, but of course not on the premises, but we'd go to like Angelo's or Angelino's, you know, the place where every off-shift guy goes. We'd all be sitting there partying it up, and here come the bosses who, you know, that we were trying to fool. It's just stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done it.
Yeah. All those guilty, things. Especially up at Lake Tahoe, where it's such a small town, you know, you try to go somewhere away from the casinos. But, yeah, I mean, well, everybody goes to the same places.
You want to punch yourself because you sit there and you go, if I were a real consummate pro, I wouldn't have to party with my friends. I would do it another place, somewhere else, a different town, a different city. I wouldn't party with them at all. But you can't help it. You're human, man, and nobody's that good. You
and
know?
That's the best part of it, actually, yeah, to me, you
exactly.
know, is the party afterwards. It's a...
All right, good. So now Anthony's going to come back again. So, Munch, you had somebody who called you or emailed you and was thinking about becoming a full-time professional gambler.
Yeah, I think this is really an interesting question. So young guy just getting out of college is considering going full-time pro. And... you know, so I just want to hear what you guys think about that. I'll tell you what I told him, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, if you're going to do it like Bob Dancer does it, you better be prepared to just sit for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours punching buttons and letting your eyes go wild and glazed. And that sounds pretty romantic. But, I mean, I'll let him talk about his own craft. For us, what I always found that it's a really great thing to do when you're young. If you're going to do it, you want to do it when you're young like that. You know, when you just get out of school, when you're in your 20s. The older you get, the harder it gets to do. You get into your 30s, you know, if you get any kind of relationships at all, you absolutely almost can't do it. You know, you find out that when you're doing it, you know, playing for a living, whether you're playing solo with a group, it's a lot of reason why guys get together in groups because they get so bored playing solo. I really respect people like Ian Anderson, you know, the famous Ian Anderson, who is a famous lone wolf. You know, he wouldn't play with anybody. He was always solo. Ian told me a story once. You know, he wrote Turning the Tables on Las Vegas and Burning the Tables, which we published the latter. And he told me once Ken Houston picked him off playing. And Ken Houston, you know, picked him off, said, he recognized him as a good player. Ken Houston approached him in an elevator. And Kenny said, I know you're good. I'd like you to play with us. Here's Kenny Houston, right? You know, Kenny Houston, the guy. And Ian looks at him and goes, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and walked out. You want nothing to do with Kenny, you know?
You know,
that's hard to do.
I have a friend who knew Ian Anderson well, you know, because Vegas was a very small town back then. And knew him well, had no idea he was writing the book, right? And he picks up the book. My friend picks up the book, starts reading it, and says, I know this guy. I know this his. He goes to his house, and he goes, hey, man, you didn't tell me you were writing a book. I love the book. And he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't write it.
Exactly.
You know, he's that kind
of
guy.
He's one of the most amazing guys. He was he made the Hall of Fame last year, right? Yeah, last year he was in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. He was the most deserving guy in the Blackjack Hall of Fame for 5, 6, 7 years prior to him being put in. I mean, he's one of the most amazing gamblers I've ever known.
But the problem is nobody knows.
I know, because he doesn't care. You talk about that consummate pro, he's the guy. But just to finish the thought, it can be very, very boring. It can be very, very unrewarding. And the reason is, think about it. When you're a great athlete, you're a great surgeon, you're great at something, what do? You do it in front of people. People celebrate what you do. You get accolades for it. You win awards, everything else. When you're really great at gambling, you have to do it quietly, surreptitiously. Nobody can know. You literally want to take the abuse of other customers who are way less skilled than you, who will yell at you and tell you you've done wrong. That's actually something you want to happen. That gets hard to take after a while.
One of the things is when you're considering turning pro is, are you good enough? You know, it's one thing to want to turn pro. It's another thing is, have your results over the past couple of years been positive?
In this guy's case, they have. Okay. He's built up his small bankroll up to...
Next thing is, it's different between being a weekend pro, where you go back to the real world, and living here for, 52 weeks a year. You should take a 2-week, 4-week, 6-week vacation in Las Vegas, Reno, or whatever other casino town, and see how it is. Gambling as on a weekend pro basis is a whole lot different than a pro basis. A lot of the excitement goes away. You need to, video poker in particular is a very boring game. Anthony alluded to that, and he's now off the show invite list again. So you're dealt 2-pair, you hold 2-pair. You need to be able, can you do that? It's one thing to do it for a weekend. It's another thing to do it for, 2,000 hours a year. So putting up with that boredom is a key part. Another thing is, what options do you have? Now, college grad, well, then, of course, you should become a gambler because there's no jobs out there for him. One of the reasons I became a professional gambler was because when I worked in big businesses, I had certain plays well with other issues. And so it always turned out to bite me every now and then, and I would get laid off, and I would say the wrong thing to the wrong people. Those of you who follow my career in video poker have learned that some of those tendencies haven't completely gone away.
I was going to say, pretty hard to believe, but yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, he's still off the show. He's not going to be on again, so say goodbye to Anthony. So that was, and Anthony's point is, if you're married, it's a lot easier to do it when you're single.
Oh, no question.
When you... having two people hooked up who have the same thoughts about dealing with money and bankroll is pretty unusual. You hit a royal, one of you wants to take a vacation to Hawaii, and one of you wants to put it in bankroll so you can play higher stakes. And you have a $50,000 bankroll and you're still trying to grow it. The other one wants a new car, and all, her relatives think you need more oat bran or something. So it's your relationship status is part of it. And if you have any other viable options, most of us who are good enough to be successful at gambling have some skills to make more money doing something else. That would be true of most of us, not all of us, but that would be true of most of us.
Well, I would add, for anybody who's considering it, it's really, really good if you can parlay it to something, if you can get a back end out of it, which I always did. I always had this plan. I actually told my father, I had originally gone to Duke University, and then I was supposed to go to UCLA, and I didn't. I dropped out and I came to Vegas. My father was a university professor. I told him I'm dropping out. You know, he didn't take that very well. I told him I was doing why I was doing it. And he just said, I really don't understand what your thinking is here. I understand the numbers. He understood the stats and all of that. But what really swung him over is I said, it's not just a one-trick situation. And I said, I've got ideas for what I could do with this skill afterwards. And he goes, like what? And I said, like publishing. I mean, I was 20 years old, going on 21. I said, like publishing. So I always had the idea that I would be able to use this knowledge to publish in some way, and I actually ended up doing it. Now, I'm not saying every guy can come out of there and become a publisher, but maybe he, you know, he can build some kind of software. He can build a name. He can do a book. He can do – it's always good if you've got something ancillary or a back end involved, and then that makes the risk less, and it makes the play a little bit more intelligent.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I agree with you 1,000%. Do these things when you're young and single. There's plenty of time in your life to get a job. You know, jobs are really overrated in my book. So, yeah, I think it's great to go out and try these things. And what's the worst that happens? You go broke and then you go get a job, you know. But what I said to him also is, first of all, you got to move to Las Vegas. Either Las Vegas, maybe Atlantic City, maybe Biloxi Gulfport. But you got to go to a place where there are a lot of casinos. Now, he's a table games player. He's smart enough that he already realizes that counting cards is kind of not the road to riches. And he's moved on to some other things, you know. But I said, how much money do you have? His bankroll's up to about $10,000. And I said, you know, it's going to be really, really tough to start out with only $10,000. And you should consider having a job and playing at the same time until you start making enough that you can really afford to, you know, because with only $10,000, your expenses can eat you up very quickly. I mean,
I don't care who you are. You're not going to understand what the fluctuations can do to you. I don't care who you are or how many books you've read or how kind of logical you are. You're never going to really understand it until that beast grabs a hold of you. And it can be wicked. And you can lose control. You really can.
Yeah. And with $10,000, I mean, you could go through that. And I mean, if you hit a period where you're – even if you're breaking even for a few months, you know, you could go through that just in your living expenses.
Because you got to eat. You got to go out once in a while. You got to put gas in your car. And you got to get to the locations. And, yeah.
Yeah.
And people don't – they don't factor that in.
And sometimes cars need new transmissions.
Right, and exactly. Yeah. So
hospital expenses.
You know, I said he should really consider, you know, yeah, move to Las Vegas, try it, maybe get a job on the side. And once you grow that bankroll bigger, if you want to quit the job because you're making enough money. But, you know, but I really agree that people should, you know, try. Don't end up 50 years old, 60 years old going, man, I wish I had tried that when I was 22.
Yeah, agree there.
You know,
yeah.
And before I had four kids and, you know. same thing with travel. I tell my son, you know, my son is 19 now and he's working and going to school and all that. And I said, you know, when you get time off, go somewhere. Get on a plane. Go to Europe. So go see what it's about. You know what I mean? Just do those things because you're going to get tied down pretty eventually, you know.
All right. So we got some other topics. Let's do some commercials first, get them out of the way. And then we have another subject to see if Anthony can reinstate himself for future shows. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Every evening in May at 8:20, they're giving away a 2013 Camaro. You do not need to be present to win, but if you are, the South Point will also pay your sales tax, vehicle registration, dealer's fees, plus $2,000 in Chevron gas cards. If you take the $18,000 cash option instead of the $25,000 car, and you're present, you still get the $2,000 in gas cards, but the other benefits you give up. Four other players win $250 in Chevron gas cards. You have 24 hours to redeem your prizes. Up to 1,000 entries may be earned each day, $1 coin in per entry. And you must activate your entries at a kiosk each day between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Entries stay in the virtual drum all month. This is a good low roller promotion for locals who live nearby. Playing $1,000 coin in per day at an even money game isn't burdensome. High rollers wish you could earn more tickets per day so that to give them advantage that way. But like I would happily play a couple hundred thousand dollars on an even game. to earn lots of entries. If that would help me, it doesn't, so I don't. But at the South Point, they would rather have the common guy win the prizes than just a few high rollers. This Saturday, May 4th, they're celebrating the Kentucky Derby by having virtual races at their machine at 12:30, 1:30, 4:30, and 5:30. $6,250 is being given away at each time period. To be eligible, you must have played $100 coin in the previous hour. When they've done this in the past with a NASCAR theme, your EV for each of these virtual drawings somewhere around $10 to $12 per person. Not worth the special trip for most of us, but if you're going to be playing that $1,000 a day for the Camaro drawings, it kind of makes sense to do your play around the time of the Derby virtual drawings. Double dipping is always a good idea. At the Palms, Friday, Saturday night drawings in May are called the $125,000 money bags drawings. Five winners are called each of the nights at 8 p.m., and they receive $500 and a chance to choose a money bag after the Saturday night drawing. You can win up to $7,000 in the drawing, plus the $500 that you got for initially being called. Tickets are earned by playing machines since 8:01 the previous Saturday. On Friday and Saturday nights, between 8 p.m. and midnight, you earn three times drawing entries. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW, Play, Earn, and Win gifts for the entire month will be free play. The redemption rate is 0.25%, so this is double points because the normal cashback at the normal cashback rate is 0.25% in free play. So up to $83,000 coin in a day, slightly over $200 in free play. As always with the PEW gifts, you get to keep your point. At videopoker.com, the daily contest for the next 3 days will be Quick Quads, Wheel Poker, and Ultimate Four of a Kind bonus. There will be monthly contests beginning May 24th. The site lets you play a large number of games at home before you try them in a casino. In addition to being able to play the free games, the website also offers a forum where members can exchange ideas. I participate in this forum more than I do the one on VP Free, where I also participate periodically. All right. On next week's show, we're going to have Brad Fredella, who is a manager for United Gaming, who has the Gambler's Bonus slot club system in the local bar, in several local bars in Las Vegas. These are establishments which have up to 15 machines per location. So there are several changes in this compared to regular casinos. So we're going to be talking to Brad. Also on the show, we're going to talk to a man named Reno Ron, who's been a professional player in the Reno area for 20-some years. And he's going to tell us about which are the best casinos to play, which games at which denominations in the greater Reno, Carson City, Lake Tahoe area. The reason we actually thought about having this Reno Ron on is somebody on VP Free suggested that we have somebody talking about Reno. And so I said, well, if somebody knows something about Reno, call me up and let's talk. So Ron did. And I spoke to him over the phone for 15 minutes and realized he was knowledgeable and would make a good radio guest. So that's what we're going to do. We're letting Munchkin have the week off. And Michael Shackelford will be our co-host next week, as he's a lot more up-to-date on video poker games than Munchkin is. The following week, we will have Michael Gaughan on the air talking about Benny Binion. Michael Gaughan is the owner of the South Point Hotel. He knows Benny Binion is actually a contemporary of Michael Gaughan's father, Jackie Gaughan, but Michael knew him quite well, and Benny Binion is a legend in Las Vegas, and there's a lot of really interesting stories about Benny Binion, and so Mr. Gaughan's going to be on the show sharing them with us. All right. A friend of mine, a lady, had the same thing happen to her at two different casinos recently with very different outcomes. She was playing Quick Quads.
Now, Quick Quads is a game where you get three of a kind, and if the other two cards add up to the rank of the three of a kind, you get paid for four of a kind, such as 10, 10, 10, 8, 2, or 5, 5, 5, 4, ace, or 6, 6, 6, 3, 3, etc. So when you're dealt a quick quad, if it's like you're playing 10 play, you get all 10 lines. You get paid for four of a kind. And although Munchkin's not a video poker player, he'll believe me when I say if you're dealt a quick quad, you hold all five cards quickly. Well, this lady did it very quickly. She used her finger to slide it across the screen to hold the cards. Now, sometimes the touchscreen works well, sometimes it doesn't. Turned out it held and then it unheld. She hit the button, so instead of 66642, she only held 6664. And so she didn't get paid as much. So she calls over the casino, the slot person, and said, hey, I held 66642. I should be paid for four of a kind on all of these lines. I was only paid for three of a kind. So I think the casino should owe me some money. When she did this at Harrah's New Orleans, the casino refused to pay her.
And the amount was?
Around $50. Good public relations. When she did this at the M here in Las Vegas, the amount was around $300, and the casino honored it. They took the opinion that anybody in their right mind would hold the quick quad. It's a pretty obvious play. And so they held it. They paid it. Now, I've been at casinos where something similar, you were dealt three kings, one of them fell off, and so it only held two. And when they came and paid, they said, we'll pay you this time, but your name's kind of going in a database, and if you ever try to collect on something like this again, we won't. And so they are cracking down on this. Most of the time a button unholds, the casino takes the position. This was not a machine malfunction. This was a player mistake, and the players want us, you know, and one of the ways the casino profits is by player mistakes, so there's no reason that they should correct a player mistake. So in the old days, they would always pay you.
Yeah, they did. In the old days, they always did.
And in the old days, they were right. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Harrah's is running those joints into the toilet. I mean, like, these are customer service businesses, right? You want to serve your customers. You want to treat them well so they come back, right? Why over $50? Now, if I'm that lady, am I ever going to go back to Harrah's New Orleans? I wouldn't.
And the word's going to get around, and it's going to be talked about.
Of
and
course.
It's,
unfortunately, sometimes over the radio.
It's Caesars Entertainment has been doing this for a long time. And I try to stay very, very neutral, but Caesars Entertainment, I don't know. They got their heads up something that it shouldn't be up. And, I mean, it's just not – it makes no sense. I mean, they look at their balance sheet and they're 20-plus billion in debt, and they go, well, we better save it where we can save it. I'm really disappointed in that group, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I am too. I mean, I brought up the fact that they have this $15 early check-in fee if you try to check into your room before 3 o'clock. I mean, you know.
Well, the other thing was the resort fees. We will not. They made fun of everybody on earth about charging resort fees. They had showgirls marching down the strip in like a mock protest and snarling traffic and everything. No resort fees. Guess what?
Yeah.
Resort fees, yes. Early check-in fees, yes. You know, more and more and more. Like I say, 20 plus billion in debt makes you do some funny things.
Yeah.
I agree. And so if you're going to collect on a machine malfunction of that sort, don't do it for one that's only $5 or $10 because your name might go on a list. If you're
well,
gonna,
that doesn't make any sense either.
Well, I mean, if your name does, well, be sensible about it. There are casinos that will put your name on the list and don't pay you anymore for future times. So anyway, we're out of time. Thank you, Anthony. We're glad to have you back again. Go back and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.